Can one person create an entity? It is said that if one person believes in an entity strongly enough, that entity can be manifest. Join us today on Speaking of Spirits as we discuss Tulpa, the meditation technique used to create entities.
Hello and welcome to Speaking of Spirits. Today our topic is Tulpa, and it's probably something that only fans of Supernatural have ever heard of. It was on that series, on an episode, but it is something that is actually out there. It's a real technique, phenomenon, mysticism. And so that's what we're going to talk about. And with me today, as always, is Tim.
Woo! Happy to be here.
And Katie.
Hi, happy to be here.
Great. Katie is new to our podcast, and we're excited to have her here. Let's get started. So, you guys know anything about Tulpa?
I lost the one webpage that I found that seemed very instructional on it. Does that count?
Yeah, right. So Tulpa is a concept. It's a mysticism and the paranormal of an object or a being that is created through spiritual or mental powers, right? Mm-hmm. So it's modern practitioners use the term to refer to a type of willed imagined being, which practitioners consider to be sentient and relatively independent. Now, sentient means something that can experience, taste, smell, living, you know. So it's supposed to be like this manifestation of a being.
An octopus, if you will.
Kinda, yeah.
That's actually what I saw. I saw a visual of, like, it looked like an octopus of, like,
Did
a
you?
Person with lots of different, like, tulpas. Yeah, it was really interesting.
Well, what I find kind of interesting about this, because the whole time I'm reading more and more into this, and I found a podcast that I'll share with everybody who talks about how to do this, how to get yourself into a meditative state to do this, right? And how to imagine a tulpa. But the whole time I'm thinking of how seriously fucked up in my world this would get. like it would be out there, like, you know, committing armed robbery, and then I'm going down for it, and it's not me. That kind of thing. That's my life. So that's, you know.
Yeah. With everything I saw, it seemed layered. And
what do you mean?
This may be going down the rabbit hole again. I apologize.
That's Tim.
Yeah, welcome to my world. But you have to do something, and then you go here, and then something here, and then something here, and then you get to the middle. It's silly the way my mind works, but that's what it did.
Okay, well, all I know is that in my life, it would probably escalate out of control almost immediately.
Well, I was kind of, like, wondering, though, is, like, you think about, like, our consciousness, right? And we can't just pull thoughts without having any context. We can't create new thoughts. So it's kind of like these people that talk about creating these, like, evil and dark tulpas. It's like that had to come from somewhere inside of you, right? Like, you couldn't have just pulled that thought out of the air. It's kind of spooky a little bit.
It is. Well, and what if you're meditating and you develop this tulpa, right? This little dude. For me, it would be like this little leprechaun dude. And I did see one, just so y'all know. I did. And it didn't involve alcohol that night.
Right.
But my
hydrogen peroxide is what it involved.
Right. But anywho, So you develop this little dude, and then this little dude is like this evil Chucky doll running around your house, and you feel this, you hear this pitter-patter of little feet everywhere, and it just gets spookier and spookier. And then does it develop its own will? And then, like, take off and do evil deeds? That's I think there's a darkness to this, but maybe not. Yeah. Well, I guess it depends on who you are.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I don't know if you guys saw, but Alexandra David Neal, she wrote a book about mysticism in Tibet, and she talks about the tulpa. Did you come across her?
Yes, I think I did.
Well, did you come across the part where she claims that they leave their host just like a baby leaves the womb?
Yeah, that was a little weird to me.
And it's kind of spooky, though, because it's like, I mean, you don't have control over them. They are their own thing, and, you know. And yeah. Amy Bruni, I don't know if you guys know Amy Bruni. Have you read her book, Life with the Afterlife?
Mm-mm.
So in that book, she talks about, like, an unconscious effort of when a group of people go to, like, investigate paranormal experiences. If they all go in with the same energy and mindset, even if they don't know it, of, like, a bad experience, they're going to unwillingly create that energy. And it's kind of like creating that tulpa, and you think it's out of your control, but it comes from somewhere inside you,
well,
whether
that's,
you realize it or not.
Yeah, that's interesting. So
is it, sorry.
Go.
Is it a like a manifested being, or?
Well, so what I'm so
up for debate,
kind of. So what I've read was that many of us grow up with an imaginary friend, and. Or maybe you like to personify your favorite character or superhero, right? And these companions usually don't last beyond childhood, right?
Yeah.
But this ancient idea is gaining more and more traction in our modern world. So the idea of manifesting a thought comes from the Tibetan monks.
Mm-hmm.
And years ago, I read this, and I cannot find it now, but this was pre-internet, so I don't know what happened to all of this. But the monks, yeah. So there was a study where there was monks, and there was hundreds and hundreds of monks. And they were meditating in a meditative state for, like, days and days and days. And they were manifesting, they were thinking of one particular object. And I forget what it was, but let's say it was a rock. And they were in a circle in this, like, amphitheater kind of thing, you know, mm-hmm. out in Tibet. And after days and days and days of manifesting, the rock appeared. Or, I mean, of willing it to appear, it appeared. That's the idea of tulpa, is you're willing something to life.
I must have read the wrong page.
Well, like I said, I remember reading this, but it wasn't called tulpa. That's kind of a more modern term to this. It was the art of meditation, yeah. and willing things that way to happen. So people do it all the time to will themselves into good health and to will themselves to
wake up.
Wake up the day.
Yeah. Get through the day. Yeah, you know, that your mother-in-law won't attack you again verbally. So that kind of stuff. You just kind of, you know, not that I'm going there. But so that kind of... And Yvonne, just in case you're listening, that was a name towards you. So, anyway.
Have you ever seen Beverly Hills Ninja?
I don't think I missed that one there.
Okay, Tim. Good. Well, so with the meditation thing, it's an old Chris Farley movie. And
I love Chris Farley.
It's fantastic. And so he meditates and goes into like the communication thing that ninjas go to. And he knows just enough to get there, but he can't control himself inside the area.
That actually sounds like a really good movie.
And so whenever someone says meditation, I always see Chris Farley upside down floating.
The absolute control.
It's fantastic.
Chris Farley brings, I forget what it was. It was that one where he was plummeting down a hill.
Yeah.
Endlessly.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again. Yeah. Yeah. I just loved him. He's so funny.
Black sheep.
So meditation is an integral part of Eastern and ancient religions. Almost every religion has a form of meditation in it, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's made like new science now. I've mentioned this, probably every podcast. But they are analyzing ions. And if ions are there, or they're willed to be there, to really summarize a really big paper I read. And if that's the case, then monks might have been onto something.
Right. So, and meditation has been attributed to the power of levitation.
Mm-hmm. Right? That's what I was reading.
Yeah. So do you remember, I'm sure every kid here has done this, right? Where you do light as a feather, stiff as a board, light as a feather, stiff as a board. I remember pre-alcoholic Colleen, right? No, we were all at a campsite. There was this huge, it was like 7 or 8 families, and we were all up there with our horses. And so all of us kids got together at one of the campfires, and we decided we wanted to try this, right? And so each of us had like the one finger under the kid, right? So there's like 10 or 12 of us around one person, but you only have one finger under him, mm-hmm. right? And so, but all of a sudden, this kid's like 3 feet off the ground, like up at then our shoulder height. And our parents are freaking out when they finally see what's going on, because, and then the kid falls, right? Because yeah. there, and that's that whole, like our eyes are closed, we're thinking really hard about it, we keep repeating that phrase, the kid that's being stiff as a board, it's stiff as a board. Because how can you lift a person up, mm-hmm. even as children, how do you lift a person up with one finger? Mm-hmm. Even 6 or 8 people, that seems kind of impossible. I don't think we could do it. But that collective meditation trance that you get into doing that, you know, first mm-hmm. it's all giggles and you're like, ah, and then all of a sudden you go somewhere in your head. Mm-hmm. Because you keep repeating the phrase, your eyes close, you go somewhere and you look down and all of a sudden this kid's off the ground. You know, until mama mm-hmm. screams and then the kid falls. So, yeah.
Good job, mom.
Yeah, I know, right? Right, mom. So, that's the power of meditation. And I think as children, we probably can get into a meditative state a lot easier than mm-hmm. as an adult.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
So. Yeah.
It's all a belief thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think we have a lot of noise, right? We're thinking of the bills and the grocery shopping and, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just day in, day out life. And people don't let, they don't now, electronics bombard our every moment of the day. Mm-hmm. How many people do you know are truly without a cell phone? Ever?
Just my kids.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. But I mean, as an adult, you never, it's always there.
It's almost impossible to like be active in society without a cell phone.
Right.
You know, like it's almost like you don't have a choice.
Yeah, I know, you know, like at the end of my workday every day, I put my cell phone down and I go outside and I go to the barn and take care of the animals. And it's so nice to have that break. Mm-hmm. It's so relaxing mm-hmm. to have that break.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've found more and more that I'm addicted to the stupid thing. Mm-hmm. Like on occasion I don't have it, I swear that something's vibrating in my pocket. It's almost it, like, as if my body's you. Saying, hey, part of you's gone, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. You better go find it. And then you freak out when you can't find it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because your whole life was wrapped up with that phone. So they say that topols aren't the same as imaginary friends or hallucinations, right? That right. they're children tend to summon their imaginary friends and typically control them. Mm-hmm. And kids know these imaginary friends are not real. For the most part now, we've dealt with kids who have, they're not imaginary friends. They're actually dead humans with them, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a difference. Mm-hmm. But imaginary friends were one time viewed as a detriment to a child's psyche. Like parents, oh, that's just, they're not real, that kind of thing. And mm-hmm. I think more and more parents are kind of letting the imaginary friend be there because I think mm-hmm. it's healthier.
Yeah, and I think there's less stigma. I think before it was like there's something wrong with my kid if they have an imaginary friend, and I think now there's less stigma around the imaginary friend. It's not associated with like mental illness as much.
Yeah, yeah, and it's only weird when the swing starts swinging on its own. Right. You know?
Right.
And then mama, see, there's Joey over there on the swing. Yeah. So imaginary friends were one time viewed, like we said, as a detriment, but scientists have made this major turnaround, and I like and that word psychiatrists
starts with P.
psychiatrists. Now the thought are children with imaginary friends are actually more social, more well adjusted. I don't know. I think that's kind of an interesting shift. Mm-hmm. But a tulpa is not an imaginary friend.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But I was reading that there was a study, and it said that whether you believe in the validity of the tulpa or not, those that claim to have created a tulpa or known a tulpa or whatever, their levels of loneliness and happiness, like, their levels of loneliness were lower, and, like, the presence of a tulpa helped their levels of loneliness.
I think we read the same study.
Really?
It was a paper that this guy wrote, and he actually did a survey of what the age groups of people who created tulpas and what was their ethnicity, and mm-hmm. and it was really quite interesting that it seems to be more of a modern phenomenon now, and they call mm-hmm. them tulpa.
I did not read the study.
Well, it's a study that was written by Samuel Vieira, I think. It was called The Varieties of Tulpa Experiences. Sentient Imaginary Friends Embodied Joint Attention and Hypnotic Society in a Wired World. Oof-da. I think this was his doctorate thesis.
Oh, poor fella.
That was...
I'm pretty sure. It reads like a doctoral thesis, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And he was talking about... The studying of tulpas and their hosts are fascinating, not least because it provides an opportunity to observe an emerging culture mm-hmm. and mediation of new kinds of persons. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, is he linking a tulpa to a new person, or the person who's making the tulpa is a new person? I don't know.
It's a great question.
I kind of felt like that study related to, I saw a lot of comparisons to, like, the bicameral brain theory. Did you see that?
No.
So... to me, what it was kind of implying is, like, because you were kind of saying, as children, when if they have the ability to meditate, they're not as distracted. I feel like people, especially people that are lonely or more vulnerable, are drawn to creating a tulpa because we're trying as a society to get back to the times when we were more in touch with, like, ourselves and we had a quieter world. And the bicameral theory talks about when our brains are left and right side. Did you read this? You're kind of nodding.
It's
clicking somewhere.
I read a different study. I'll bring it up in just a minute.
Okay. Yeah. So basically about human consciousness. And before it kind of came to being, the right side of the brain and the left side of the brain didn't connect the way it does now. We weren't aware that that inner voice was actually ourself and not an outside source. And so it's kind of like this meditation and things was used by, like, shamans and medicine men to kind of touch into, like, their spiritual world, right? And as a society, we're trying to get back to that because we're longing for it. And so we're trying to get back to that state of mind where we can meditate and connect with all of that. And so...
that's interesting.
Yeah. So it doesn't surprise me that people, we start to feel this loneliness in society and we're drawn back to that, having that connection with the world and the spirit world and stuff. So it's interesting that it is, I think it is more of a modern kind
scenario. That makes sense, because the more technology we have, it seems the lonelier people are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's the study I read.
Hey!
So it had to do with the metaverse.
Okay.
And Oculus and what people are trying to do with that. And it's basically making a connected world because we're so disconnected in this world.
Wow.
It was something. It was one of those TikTok rabbit holes that I went all the way down in.
Is there research on it already, or is it just proposed?
They're starting.
Oh, interesting.
Mm. See, all of it gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah.
I hope someday we unplug it all.
It feels very out of control.
Doesn't it?
Technology, it's like we don't feel like we can have control over it.
It's its own thing. I mean, my dad used to call it the idiot box for a reason. And honestly, my dad didn't have TV for... probably 40 years.
He was too busy.
He was a busy guy, yeah. He's up at the airport, building airplanes, drinking beer, having a good time. He didn't want TV. They would actually go down and drink a beer and watch the news so that they could be informed of what's going on, and then they'd go home.
Yeah.
Or there was a TV up at the airport. They'd sit around it, drink a beer, and go home. I mean, everything revolved around beer. But and brats. Yeah, a lot of brats. So, but... he didn't want the distraction in his life.
Mm-hmm. So imagine being completely distracted and your life being the inconvenience.
Like it.
It's an interesting,
you know, in the problem. The witchy world that I live in, because I'm weird like that. The whole point of being outside is to ground yourself and get mm-hmm. away and get yourself back to the natural elements. Mm-hmm. Take that walk in the woods, go outside. And I tell my friends this all the time. you know, that are, if they're struggling with depression or all that kind of stuff, God, the outdoors is the best therapy.
That's why I hate snow.
Yeah, I know, right? But getting outside, taking a walk in the woods, taking your dogs for a walk, whatever it is, get outside and get away from this and leave the phone at home. Get away. Get away from it all because it's... But getting back to tulpas, okay? So anyway, he was talking about this guy, Samuel, who did the study, that this new kinds of persons he was talking about, which I'm not clear on if it's the tulpa or the person creating the tulpa is the new persons. He says, in this case, that of a multiple humanoid and non-human persons hosted in single bodies and a large-scale sociocultural matrix of healing generated without physical interaction between members. Mm-hmm. Now, this brings me back to prayer circles, in a way.
Yeah.
Because you have, now it's been documented, mm-hmm. like, whether you believe in God or not, prayer circles, if you're praying to a spiritual higher being or spirituality or God, and it's a collective prayer for the same reason, like healing Ted, because Ted has cancer, that all of a sudden Ted's cancer clears up, or little Jimmy can walk, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. These have been documented. Prayer circles have been documented to help, and doctors are always baffled by it. But when you get that collective conscious of people sending that healing energy out, it works.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if, like, in the prayer circles where it's been documented, does the person they're praying for, are they, like, consenting to, like, do they know about it?
In many cases, it's literally
just the power of,
yeah, like say, for example, circle. The little ladies at a church say, we need to pray for Joe because he's been, you know, he has phlebitis this week. I don't even know what that word means. But anyway, you know what I'm saying? So all of a sudden, Joe's feeling great the next day. It's like this collective thing.
That's so wild.
And you what? So there's this whole, you know, whatever thought you're putting out in the universe, it goes. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be really careful about what you're thinking about.
That's what's so kind of scary about the tulpas.
It like, is, isn't it? Because I really know I have a dark side.
And that's what I feel like the tulpa is. It's like you can't, like, they, a lot of people are like, oh, the tulpa turns evil. And I'm like, that has to come from
me. Exactly. I mean, I know I've got a dark side. So it's there. And I welcome it sometimes. And yeah, so you have to be really careful. You know, I have a very good friend who's a medium here in town. And she's very good about saying, you know, be careful what you're thinking about. Mm-hmm. Because that power, that when you're really pissed off and you're thinking really negative thoughts about somebody, somebody's done you wrong, and you're really out there thinking about it, that thought is going out somewhere. Mm-hmm. And be careful.
And it's attracting really, more.
It's isn't
attracting
it though?
The
yes.
bad jujus. Like yes. you're like, oh, I'm okay with like these bad thoughts, so come give me some more. Like it's, you do have to be careful.
You can feel it too. Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about energy on this podcast.
Yeah.
But that energy, especially mm-hmm. if you're angry or whatever, mm-hmm. it can build to that exploding point. Mm-hmm. And that exploding point is energy. You can't mm-hmm. destroy energy. Where does it go?
Yeah.
So, the term is called a tulpamancer. If you're a tulpa-making person, you're a tulpamancer? Yes. So, a tulpa is presently understood in the tulpamancer community is a sentinel being who becomes incarnate or embodied through thought form. So it's like they become real, right?
Does that feel like a made-up word?
Tulpa?
Tulpamancer.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah, I feel like that definitely came from like Reddit or something. Like that came from a different place.
Yeah. So the community is primarily divided between so-called psychological and metaphysical explanatory principles, right? So mm-hmm. the psychological community, which is the neuroscientists, is the explanation of choice. The tulpas are mental constructs that have achieved sentience, right? Mm-hmm. And metaphysical explanations believe that tulpas are agents of the supernatural that exist outside the host minds and who come to communicate with them. So, like, you've made it unaware that you've made it, and all of a sudden they're like tethered to you, you know. Oof-ta. So, you know, we talk a lot about having a spirit guide, or, and a lot of times our spirit guides, they don't necessarily have to be your relatives, but many times they are. And Christians, a lot of times they have spirit guides who are angels. So there's different guides. I wouldn't call them tulpas. I think so this is
created,
different.
Created, right? Yeah, the right. Tulpa is like...
But, well, there's two forms here, right? There's the tulpa that you've made. You've put it mm-hmm. out there and you've made it. And this other tulpa that they're agents of supernatural origins. So they've like floating around waiting to attach themselves to you, it sounds like, to me.
Trying to like manifest in some way.
Or they've already been manifested. Now they're looking for a host. I don't know. That's the way I look at it. It's really supernatural, or really sci-fi to me.
Yeah.
Do you feel that these are some of the non-human things you run into?
I wouldn't call them tulpas, but maybe I haven't thought enough about it to wonder if they are. We dealt with two non-human entities on a regular basis in Pocatello, Blackfoot, Idaho Falls, Income, this whole valley. We've mm-hmm. run into, in our paranormal work, two non-human entities. And they've described themselves. And one of them is quite bad. Causes illness, causes tension, causes divorce, causes ugly, very nasty stuff. The other one hangs out and watches, gets a thrill out of it. Yeah, but neither of them are good.
That energy still comes from somewhere.
It does,
you know?
And we have figured out who's manifesting this stuff.
Do you think it's intentional? Yes. Oof-ta.
That's kind of why I brought it up. Yeah. Do you think it's...
Yes, we know who it is.
But...
Maybe under a different name, but kind of the same concept.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so there are different religions, right? We've talked about voodoo. And voodoo in itself is no different than any other religion. But they do have a darkness to it. Mm-hmm. But a lot of religions do. Even Catholicism can go dark when it wants to, right? So a lot of... But... And then there's Santeria, which
fantastic song.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And there is, and this is tied to that. Yeah.
So I wonder if we're calling the same thing different names.
Different names.
Could be.
Understood differently. I'm sure it's interpreted differently depending on your culture and your society and your
yes
interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So as I'm, they've actually, and I was starting to go there with some of my research, and then it got really heavy, and I'm like, okay, I didn't have enough beer to get through that one. because they were talking about tulpas being used in the Native American tribes. They don't call them tulpas, obviously, because this is from Tibet.
Yeah.
Right? But... The Native Americans, particularly some of the ones, tribes that came out of Canada, would manifest their thoughts and send them to attack. And it got really deep. Wow. Yeah, it was really heavy. And then, of course, it was another doctoral candidate writing this paper. And can I just say to all you people working on your PhDs, bring it down a notch.
Three syllables.
Because I'm reading this going, what? And I have to reread it and reread it. I'm not a smart person, okay? So it's like, come on, man.
I get it
that you're like way up there in the clouds, but we're trying to read this stuff. So bring it down here. You know, you can use Word and it'll tell you what grade level you're at. Bring it down like 4 grades for the rest of us to read, okay? But anyway, it was talking about this whole idea of tribal warfare with Native American tribes, Native America, right? Because Canada is North America. So Canadian tribes that were sending these, like, for lack of a better word, tulpas out for warfare. So it was kind of interesting that they were going there. But again, we're trying to describe using these terms what the natives were using. The natives calling it completely different.
Yeah.
They're saying something completely different, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. They didn't call them tulpas.
But it can't be like some small coincidence that tulpa or whatever you want to call it is present through different times and different places.
Right.
It can't be a small mm-hmm. coincidence, you know, no matter how you want to explain it.
Yeah, so that there's energy. And I think, and we find this right on our investigations, that we'll be talking with dead Uncle Fred. And then all of a sudden, boom, here comes somebody else in. And when I'm holding the dowsing rods, I can feel the shift. And all of a sudden, it's not Fred. It's somebody else or something has just walked in and taken control of the conversation. And so when these things are out there, they're roaming around, this energy's out there, and you start meditating about this energy, guess what? It's coming through the door. So that, I tell people all the time to be very, very careful about what you're doing, because you can attract. You will attract. I had a friend and a medium over last night. She walks in the house. She goes, "Who's the little girl?" Now, in my house, the only dead person I know that's allowed in there is my dad. He's there every single day, and he's always doing shit. I did not know there was a little girl. She walked in. It was Carrie. She's been on our podcast. She's part of our team. She walks in. She goes, "Yeah, there's a little girl. Young girl." She said, "Who's the young girl?" I'm like, "Young girl." She goes, "Well, she was here for a fleeting second and gone." And I'm like, "Ooh, well, I didn't know that." But I was like four beers deep into a, you know, salami at that point, waiting for Carrie to show up. So just saying, I know that most of my stories revolve around alcohol, but I'm Irish, so give me a break. Anyhow, so you have to be really careful. And now I was thinking back today, I was prepping for this recording tonight, and I was thinking, was I thinking about one of our clients yesterday? And a little, was there a girl, you know what I mean? So what was I, did I attract her? Was I attracting her last night? Like, she was there. I didn't even know she was there. But Carrie's like, "Oh, yeah, she was here, but here and gone." You know, very fleeting. So.
Yeah, it's interesting how just about all of our podcasts, when we're talking about one specific thing, it is reminiscent of another thing. Mm-hmm. And one could say that it may even prove the theory that weird stuff's happening, and it has been from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Dun, dun, dun.
So, are they dangerous? Yeah, I guess they could. What scares me about all of this stuff is that anytime, even normal, air quotes, paranormal activity, you have a whole lot of people looking at you like you need to be locked up in Blackfoot South, yeah. Right? Because they don't deal with any of this. It doesn't exist to them. It's all fantasy. You guys need to check yourself into a hospital because it's not real. Until it happens to them, then I chuckle. But those lines, I think they're blurred. And... Mm-hmm. So I think you just have to be careful with, if you want to make a TOPA, I told you, I'm here to give you information.
So. Do so at your own risk.
That's right. Yeah, just saying. Ooh. So I was listening to a podcast, and I found him through Coast to Coast. Yeah, mm-hmm. The podcast. So they have different hosts on there that they have podcasting, right? And there's a guy called Joshua P. Warren podcast, and it's How to Affect Your Environment. So it was this first podcast on tulpas. I thought it was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think he called it tulpas, but it was creating a thought form. So if you go to the Joshua P. Warren podcast, you can... He talks about how to create that thought form. And it's, he wasn't going down that avenue completely of a tulpa, but it's basically how to manifest making more money or better health or...
Like intentions.
Intentions.
Yeah.
Yeah, you bet. And so I would say that you could use the same... what he's telling you, his instructions on how to do this... It's basically the same thing. Yeah. It's how to create that thought form. And like you writing down a sentence, "I'm going to make more money." And then putting that little slip of paper, "I'm going to make more money," everywhere. On your fridge, by your bed, every so that you keep having to you're reaffirming what it says every time you read it. And it puts you in the frame of mind of, "I'm going to make more money." So your mind then goes to, "How can I make more money?" And it frees that up. Frees up that energy of, oh, you know, let's do this. I can make more money doing this or that. So, right, it's that intentions. But using these techniques that he tells you about, you can easily spiral that off into, I'm going to make a topa. I'm going to make this bean. I'm going to make my little leprechaun dude.
Yeah.
Right?
Focused intentions, they're something.
Yeah.
They really are.
Yeah. So I'd be really curious if anybody in our audience has ever has done this. I actually purposely made a topa. And if so, is it still with you? And there isn't anything that tells you how to get rid of it once you've made it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was going to be my next question. Is there a delete button?
Exactly.
So for life.
Okay. So I don't know if any of you have ever seen, this is the age thing. The movie, there's movies out there about multiple personalities, right? Sybil being one of the first and stuff like that, right? But there's, can people who have split personalities, can part of those personalities be tulpas they've manifested and didn't know it? I mean...
Well, and so if you're saying a topia, I'm going to mess this word up for the rest of my life. Topa? Topa? How do you say this?
Tulpa.
Tulpa. Thank you so very much. If they're sentient, can they create more?
Oh, right.
No.
Then you got a whole little family.
Oh. Russian doll.
Yeah. Uh-uh. And yeah. And think about it, right? So then are they inbred? And then does that DNA get all weirded out?
That's a good question.
And I feel like, too.
Yeah,
eventually, like, to me, it's like Shelley's Frankenstein. Like, morally, is it in our right to take our energy and create something that we no longer, that can just go and do its own thing?
I know, right?
You know, I mean, I guess that's kind of like having kids, right? But, but you know what I'm saying? Like, just for funsies, like, I feel like that could get kind of sketchy real quick.
Yeah, I think so.
If you don't have good intentions, if you're not in a good place emotionally and spiritually,
so spiral. This podcast, right, that I was talking about, this guy, Joshua P. Warren podcast, he talks about creating a minion, which to me is a topa. Right? A minion. Mm-hmm. A little helper to carry out a task. You give life to a creature you imagine. Now you write down the sentence to the minion in the form of a direction, like, I want you to make it sunny on my daughter's wedding day. But so that's a nice, pleasant thought. Right? Mm-hmm. Or, I want you to help me find a job. But how easily is it to say, I want you to do something very ugly to somebody else. Yeah. Right? So, you draw a picture of your minion. It could be a bunny or a troll or whatever. You give it a name. You write the name down. You speak to it. You give it life. You thank it for working for you. That's a tulpa. Your minion. Yeah. That's something that's taking shape and form. And you're putting a lot of energy to it. Mm-hmm. And you love it. You offer it things. You give it food. And it's like, wow, boy, does this, that can spiral out of control pretty quick. But, and then does it create a psychological illness in you? Like all of a sudden you're living for this tulpa that is it's not real.
Yeah.
Or is it? And then the doctors come carry you away because you're like, no, it's not, I'm fine.
Yeah.
I feel like it can be, like, definitely dangerous for somebody who is very vulnerable in that sense.
Yeah.
Just for that reason is it's, like, it's definitely not a good coping mechanism if you don't understand, like, you know, how energy works and things. Like, it could maybe not be a healthy coping mechanism.
Yeah. I think it's, so it can be really scary. I think it's fascinating that Tibetan monks have manifested physical objects from the art of meditation. But it was collective. I mean, it took hundreds of them to do it.
Yeah.
And for days and days. They didn't eat. They didn't drink. They were in a meditative state forever. That kind of experiment, if you will. They've done it. Mm-hmm. But, and people healing, you know, power of prayer, it has been documented for centuries to heal people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But those are intentions that are not negative.
Right. And focused intentions in general, like just the money example. I have a few friends that that's their thing. Like, it's all about the money. And it's all about the zeros in the bank account, the doors that they own, all of that. Mm-hmm. And it's become such an intent focus. That's what their life is, and that's what they say their life is. Like, that's what they hang their hat on. And I think with all things, period, you have to have balance in everything. And if you don't have that balance with that intent and focus, anything can be dark.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, would it, like, if you put your energy into something, right? I mean, you would think that manifesting, like, the monks manifesting the rock, that takes so much energy. Like, is that depleting to someone if they're like, I'm going to manifest a tulpa and it's going to take... I mean, if it's sentient and it just does its own thing, like, is that dangerous for you?
I would imagine only because I know how exhausting it is to hold dowsing rods and to talk to spirit. Like, it's... And the more that come forward, the more exhausted I am. And within like an hour, I'm a noodle. I can't do anything else. I'm physically shot for the rest of the night. Because it's that energy is, they're drawing on you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exhausting. So I can imagine that putting that much effort mentally into something may not be good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that balance thing. Like, you have to realize that you're putting that energy and it doesn't come back to you.
Like, you know, I wouldn't mind a tulpa who cleaned the house and took out the garbage, cleaned the stalls, did all the nasty stuff that I have to do on a daily basis, right? Clean up Daisy's poop when she poops in the house. That kind of thing, you know? But somehow I think all of a sudden it's going to find the door and escape. And some days, like, I want to, and go do its own thing. I'm not sure that that's necessarily a good thing to have out there running around. But if you've made a tulpa, I'd love to hear your experience.
Me too. If you're a psychologist, we'd love to talk with you too.
Yeah. Well, they're all going to say we're all crazy. But I'd like to hear everybody's thoughts on it. I mean, what? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, I think this was a great topic. Thanks for joining us as always. And we look forward to our next session of Speaking of Spirits.
Da-da-da.
You've been listening to Speaking of Spirits, powered by Pocatello Paranormal Research in Pocatello, Idaho. Thank you for joining us today. We're glad you could be here. If you're enjoying the podcast, please do us a favor and go to whatever platform you are listening to the podcast on and give us a review. We prefer the 5-star reviews. This helps us know how we're doing, and it helps others to find the podcast. Thank you for joining us, and we hope to see you on our next podcast. Ha 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 ha.